Hello and welcome to Episode Party, a podcast where we talk about our favourite podcasts. I'm Freddie Harrison.
I'm Jack Tutor.
And we are joined this episode by Ian McKinnon.
Woohoo! Hello guys, nice to be here.
Hello. Nice to meet you too. Jack, let's not muck about. You're first up. Tell us about your podcast.
Sure thing. So my recommendation to you guys was The Heart, which is part of the Radiotopia Network, presented by Caitlin Prest. And it used to be a radio show actually called Audio Smut as well, and then transitioned to being a podcast. And it's a show that centres on love, intimacy, sexuality, relationships, and the way that these concepts kind of sit so awkwardly inside the human body. I mean, the show has actually stopped making new episodes, but the stories don't really have an expiration date because they're about relationships and stuff, so there's nothing to stop you going back into the archives if you so wish. So like everything on Radiotopia, it's super produced. Everything is very nicely sculpted. It's one of those kind of very narrative-driven shows where the narratives are very carefully crafted, and there's a lot of incidental audio and things dropped in and filled recordings and all sorts. But the key thing with this one, I think, is that there's something quite mushy and imperfect about it. It hasn't got that pristineness that a lot of those Radiotopia shows tend to have. There's a lot of whispers and body movements and a lot of saliva clacking as well. It's quite a headphone listen. It's very visceral. It's a lot on the headphones. But there's also like intimate sounds of another sort, which is those kind of like incidental, very private conversations and audio that's been recorded on clearly quite low fidelity microphones. Like, they're clearly audiophiles in the sense that they alter what microphone they're using to get a different effect. So sometimes you'll get more breath and it'll be quite noisy and plosive, and other times it's like super crystal clear. Other times it's a big immersive field recording that wraps around you of like a restaurant or something like that. And I love the way that they produce this show. I think they clearly understand their subject matter so much. I think they understand the both the discomfort and the warmth that can come through in these kind of concepts. Like, it's love can be a complicated thing, sex can be a complicated thing, and I think they really put all of that into the show. And the episode that I picked out for you guys to listen to was one called Caitlin and Mitra. Part one, there's two parts to this one, and it actually centers on the start of the creative collaboration between the two main people behind The Heart, which are Caitlin Prest and producer Mitra Gaboli. There's a lot of obvious parallels between love and this kind of collaborative creative relationship. I mean, in fact, they're almost indistinguishable. If you just came into this not knowing how these two people were related, a lot of the way that this is conveyed is exactly like a story of love, and one that doesn't always go, you know, too peachy as well, but it really demonstrates The Heart at its best, as far as I'm concerned. Like, it's quite poetic, but not in a way that kind of makes you roll your eyes and like, yeah, but what are you really saying? I think it stays kind of like on task, and you understand what's going on. It's still very vivid and very real. There's a lot of Boards of Canada in the soundtrack as well, who are one of my fave bands. I did pick another episode as well, because the one that I selected seemed to disappear from podcast feeds for some weird reason. So I also suggested the episode The God and the Gaze, which was written and produced by Phoebe Wang, who joined The Heart later down the line. And that's a story of how Phoebe is trying to reconcile her status as someone who is gay, but also someone who grew up Christian. So she has a lot of friends who are still Christian, who struggle to reconcile their personal affection with her sexuality, and obviously the moral framework through which they're seeing that. And it's a very fraught story, and I think has a lot of nuance and intimacy to it. But I've babbled quite enough. I really like the podcast, and do you know what? It was really nice to revisit this, because it's one that's lingered in my head for a while, but I haven't actually listened for a while. So, because they've stopped making episodes. But it was, you know, nice to dive back in and feel that my sentiments towards it are still very strong. Freddie, what you reckon?
Well, Jack, that was utterly breathless in your
wasn't it? How do you follow that?
Exactly. I mean, this is the thing. My responses are usually much more subdued and a little more sparse, but I'll do my best. I mean, I really like The Heart, and this is the first time that I've listened to it deliberately, I guess is a good way of putting it, because being a Radiotopia show, there's occasional cross-promotion, and I've definitely heard at least bits of The Heart or previews of The Heart or episodes from The Heart on things like 99% Invisible. We've also discussed Meet, the podcast by Jonathan Zenti, on the show before, which premiered on The Heart.
Yes.
Which was part of a Radiotopia thing that they did. So I've kind of heard The Heart without hearing The Heart, but it was nice to dive into like a couple of episodes that are out of the context of another show, because I find that like listening to The Heart via 99% Invisible, it kind of colours it a little bit, because you get an introduction by Roman Mars and then you start expecting a 99% Invisible episode and all of a sudden it's not. And that's totally fine. But so it was really, really nice to listen to it completely in its own context. And I really, really enjoyed both of the episodes you suggested, Jack. I thought Caitlin and Mitra was brilliant in the way that it kind of played off this comparison between a creative partnership and a marital partnership. And I think I was listening early in the morning, so I probably wasn't quite with it. But for about half of it, I was going, so are they married? Have they got married? When are they getting married?
where am I?
Yeah. And I didn't even kind of clock that it was a metaphor, which probably says a lot more for my intelligence at about 7 o'clock in the morning than it does about the show. But I did like the writing in that, and I think that's one of the things that stuck out for me was how well written everything is and how deliberate everything is. And I guess to some people that's can be a turn off. I guess to some people they'd love, you know, they like their podcasts a bit more off the hoof, a little more improvised. But you know, I think there's a place for really heavily scripted, heavily edited, heavily curated podcasts. And I think the nice thing about something like The Heart is, you know, if you're going to do that style, if you're going to go to those lengths, do it well and do it meticulously. And I think The Heart does an amazing job of that. I think there's nothing about this podcast that's not completely deliberate and, you know, very, very intentional. And I really, really enjoyed that. So, yeah, I thought both episodes you recommended, Jack, were brilliant. And I thought it was really interesting that the two episodes you recommended were very, very specific and personal to the hosts. I don't think that's right for every podcast, every episode they do, is it?
No.
So it was kind of cool that was the case. And I guess that just lent this whole other level of intimacy to it. I mean, it's already an extremely intimate podcast. I mean, you know, you've got the presenters talking extremely close to the mic. You know, they're very much... It very much feels like they're whispering in your ear, not least because sometimes they are whispering.
Actually whispering in your ear, yes.
Exactly. So, you know, but it feels like you're being, you know, shared a story that no one else is listening to, which is quite nice in a way, depending on how you're feeling at the time. And I really, really enjoyed it. I think we've gone on far too long without bringing Ian in. So Ian, please rescue our listeners from our monotony.
I felt like I was just listening to another episode of Episode Party. That's weird. It's like, oh, I can join in now. This is cool. Yeah. what did I think about it? Okay, I'm gonna agree with both of you, and yet slightly step back. Mm-hmm. So I think production wise, it's incredibly polished. And that, for me, as somebody who produces podcasts, I respect the sheer effort and single-mindedness to be able to deliver that polished a piece of audio. I mean, it's quite spectacular the amount of efforts that they have clearly gone to get things sounding that way. But like Freddie was saying, I'm one of these people who prefer something a little bit more kind of off the cuff, not quite so... you know, nailed down. And it can, at times for me, it just felt almost slightly overcrafted, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely.
But at the same time, I'm a firm believer in the power and necessity of story. I've long believed that story is effectively what makes us human. And anything that delivers story in an appealing and interesting, engaging way is something that I can get on board with. Even if, as it is in this case, it can be uncomfortable at times.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm trying to choose my words reasonably carefully here, but it can be an uncomfortable listen, not least of which because, as we've already mentioned a few times there, the level of intimacy is quite high. And you can kind of feel almost like, oh, should I be here, you know?
Yeah, I'll leave you guys to it.
Yeah, it's like, okay, yeah. I'll just step aside here and just let you get on with it for a bit, yeah. You know? And so, yeah, so there's that kind of thing. But also, because they have that level of openness, it means that they're not afraid of going into issues and discussing things which are, frankly, very, very difficult to deal with. In terms of the two episodes that we listened to, I definitely enjoyed the God and the Gaze episode much more than I did the Caitlin and Mitra one. And that may be because, coming like from my own cultural background, I kind of associated much more with that sort of Christian upbringing and trying to then come to terms with, you know, a different view of the world that you hadn't really been exposed to in your childhood. And having to kind of, you know, readjust, you know, how you view people and beliefs and rights and wrongs and, you know, and trying to make sense of that for yourself. I really appreciated that. I thought that was a particularly good episode. And the fact that that episode actually had so much, as you called it, field audio, which is basically stuff that was recorded right there and then with the people that she's talking about in the episode, I thought that was... Wow. And to be able to get people, I mean, all credit to the folks that she was talking to be actually willing to go on record, saying some of the things that they were saying and being as honest as they were, although it wasn't what she necessarily wanted to hear from them, the fact that they were willing to actually be recorded saying these things kind of was like, wow.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, absolutely. There was the pastor. Was it the pastor?
And you're hearing him crying. Word.
Yeah. But also as well, I mean, has the most sincere and unflinching confrontation with his own emotions on it, which I've never heard. You know, I don't think I would have the courage, personally, to speak so openly and so like coherently about the things that make me so inherently uncomfortable, but it's just like amazing.
And for me, I mean, I am a person of faith, and I find these are things which, you know, to this day I still struggle with, and it kind of was a way of expressing that struggle. And the conclusion that she comes to at the end, which is basically that there kind of is no conclusion, is kind of that same limbo that I find myself being sort of thrown into. And so it's nice to know in many ways, like, it's like misery loves company, you know? the fact that, you know, it's not just you or, you know, your friends that are having these struggles of trying to make sense of the world. You know, we're all in it together. And quite frankly, as I say, you know, as a Christian, as a person of faith, I think it would actually do an awful lot of people within Christian circles a lot of good to listen to this and really get a sense of, you know, maybe how things are viewed from the other side. And I think the more we have understanding of, you know, differing points of view and be able to have that kind of honest, open sort of discussion about things and just putting our hearts on our sleeves, I think everybody would be a whole lot better off if we did that.
I think what's fascinating is, speaking as someone who isn't from faith, I was really interested. As I was listening, I was like, what is this experience like as a listening experience for someone who is on the other side? Because I think what makes this so nuanced and balanced from what I can understand, having no direct experience of the other side, but it felt like she was genuinely straddling those two worlds and was not trying in some sort of act of diplomacy to reach out and speak for the other side in absence of it. It
was like sometimes you'll watch a documentary where somebody's obviously coming in with an agenda. They're coming in, you know, and they basically want to expose the other side as being, you know, a negative thing. But yeah. You really felt with her that she was genuinely trying to find a bridge.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, and yeah, that's definitely for me what made it so compelling. And I think that's the kind of thing where, as you say, you get out the other side and there is no answer. Those two elements are still coming against each other. And I think had there been a resolution, it would have had to have come from falling down on one side of the other, which would have felt like a real, you know, duff thing to do.
Yeah,
after
yeah,
something
yeah.
that's, you know, got such a sort of a back and forth rhythm to it, or like this mm-hmm. oscillating tension to it. But I mean, it's to pick up as well on your point about the kind of podcast that you listen to. I mean, I guess, Ian, as well, that kind of links in with a podcast that you like to make. I mean, there's a lot of like open conversation and a lot of like raw mm-hmm. interaction between people. I mean, is yeah. that where your kind of central interest in podcasts resides? Like those kind of discussions rather than something that's produced
so.
Like this?
I think so. I mean, I think what got me into podcasting in the first place was the kind of water cooler kind of idea, you know, discussing initially. Was discussing TV shows and not having friends around to discuss the things that I like discussing, you know, because I live in a pokey little island out in the middle of the Atlantic, you know, and so not having kind of having geeky nerdy friends to be able to bounce all of these things off of was really what I wanted. And, you know, finding your tribe, finding your people and being able to have these conversations and bounce things off of each other and just spitballing, you know, that's, I think, the kind of interaction that I look for in my podcasts generally. Although, to be fair, I also do like various kind of heavily scripted things. For example, like Welcome to Night Vale is one thing that I've really right. enjoyed listening to, which yeah. I mean, heavens above, that is incredibly crafted, incredibly written, you know.
Yes.
But at the same time, it has, because it's got that element of story behind it, and it comes off as being a more live feeling thing, because it is, you know, framed as a radio broadcast. Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel quite that nailed down, you know. But
yes.
I do like the spontaneity.
Yeah, and because Fred's, I mean, we come back to this quite a lot, in that both me and you, our interests probably lie on opposite end of the spectrum generally. I mean, it's
yeah.
kind of funny that I've picked The Heart, because actually, if I had to pin it down, it's more of a Freddie show than a Jack show. But,
yeah.
you know, hey, we cross over every now and then. But you're, yeah, that's the impression I get from you anyway, Fred.
Yeah, I mean, I it's funny, Ian, when you were talking there, you picked up on something that I perhaps didn't think about earlier, which I was too busy praising how brilliantly put together it is to remember that actually there were points in that where I did find it extremely awkward as well.
Yeah.
And you know, in yeah. a similar way that, you know, I said, oh, you know, it's like you're being told something that no one else is being told, and it's just you being told these things. At the same time, when someone's whispering in your ear and telling you something that it's just, you know, a little bit awkward or a little too personal for your liking, it does jar you. And
mm-hmm.
I think that's healthy, and I think, you know, we've discussed earlier, it's good to hear those different viewpoints.
Yeah.
But I think sometimes it's nice to have, I think, you know, we talk about our taste, but it's nice to have something in your kind of podcast queue of shows that just jars you a little bit, you know, in a good way, in a way that, you know, you feel more rounded as a human being for getting to the end.
It stops you getting entrenched and complacent in your thought processes, you know.
Yeah.
Indeed. Ian, tell us about your recommendation.
Well, talking about spontaneity, my podcast recommendation was The Incomparable Game Show, and specifically the episode that I gave you guys to listen to was an episode of Low Definition. I've listened to The Incomparable Network for quite a long time now. Again, it fits into my water cooler mentality. Bunch of people coming together, talking about nerdy topics, be it TV shows, movies, comic books, you name it. And I've loved everything that they've done, but I think the thing that I've enjoyed the most of all the things that The Incomparable has done has been the game show, where a bunch of them who have been now podcasting together for many, many years, and you can tell that these people are friends.
Yes.
They get together and they play games. Quite simply, they play games. Occasionally they play Trivial Pursuit. Occasionally they play something which resembles Family Fortunes or Family Feud if you're in the US, but not quite. And in this particular instance, it's a game which I think I described as being not 100 miles away from Balderdash.
Right.
And it's just jolly good fun. It makes a very entertaining listen. You get a lot of very clever people, very funny people. A lot of them are either tech journalists or involved in the, you know, in various other podcasts and things like that. So these are people who are used to kind of being fairly spontaneous, being clever, being funny, and all piling together and just having a good laugh with each other.
Yeah.
Framed within that framework of a game show. The one that I actually picked, I could have picked any number of them, and some of them may have been funnier than the one that I actually chose, but I just randomly picked that one as a pretty decent example of what goes on. So for those of you who maybe haven't heard it yet, in Low Definition, the host of the show, Steve Lutz, picks various words. Some of them may be listener words, words that have been submitted by fans of the show. And the others have to, if they know what the meaning of the word, they send that definition through. If they do not know the meaning of the word, they create what they think might be the definition of that word and send that through. And then everybody picks which ones they think is right, and points are awarded accordingly. Usually with much merriment and... and hilarity ensues. So, yeah, I just love it. I just think it's a lot of fun. It's one of these things that you can listen to doing just about anything.
Yes.
But it doesn't require... I mean, some podcasts I find that I have to listen to them in a particular situation. I would have to listen to them while, for example, you know, lying in bed or while sitting out in the garden having a coffee. But this is the kind of thing that it's, I guess in many ways, it's kind of audio fluff, but at the same time, it is engaging, and it's the kind of thing that if you happen to be listening to it while walking around the supermarket, occasionally, you will be in danger of embarrassing yourself tremendously when you suddenly burst into uproarious laughter around the frozen food section, and people are looking at you as if you have lost your mind.
Yeah.
So, anyway, that was my take. What do you reckon? Shall we go to Jack? Let's throw it to Jack.
Let's go to me. I should say, Freddie and I are recording in the same room for the very first time, and usually. I know, right? But someone usually says, so what do you guys think of it? And then one of us has to awkwardly pick who goes first. So I did a very overt, like, pointing at Freddie. And then you selected me to go first, which completely... We've got to get used to this being in the same room, Freds. We'll get there. Actually, this leads quite nicely onto my thoughts on the incomparable game show. I mean, this was, yeah, so much fun. And I think it's so obvious that everyone involved is having, like, a really good time. They're constantly sort of jibing each other and joking with each other. And the thing that I think really hits that home is those moments of silence. So when everyone has to submit their definitions, when you hear it, by the time you hear it, they put a musical bed down. But you can just tell that silence is, like, kind of a twitchy, sort of giggly silence. You know, the one that you'd get in exams and stuff like that at school.
Can I pause you there, actually, and say I signed up as a member to The Incomparable, and one of the things that they give you in The Incomparable when you're a member is they give you the unedited bootlegs.
Oh,
wow.
And I have to say, the unedited bootlegs of the game show are the absolute best. Because you hear these lengthy silences while people are frantically clacking away on their keyboards, and then you hear Steve Lutz, the host, just bursting into uproarious laughter when somebody has submitted their definition. It's brilliant. Wow. It's worth it just for that.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely the impression I got, is that, like, it's this thing where it's always kind of on the verge of bursting. Like, everyone's kind of so primed to laugh, because I think the situation in itself, I think it's so ripe for humor. I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, if you think of any game show or anything that involves games like Trivial Pursuit, as you said, those are things that are primarily there to engage with personally in the same room at the same time. And you kind of think intellectually, the most optimal environment for those things is to be in person with each other. But what this really shows, I think, is that the remote kind of recording setup, I mean, I get the impression that everyone's in their own, you know, studio or whatever. And this is actually, I think they mentioned the Skype call at one point, so it's being governed by Skype. But actually, it uses it to its advantage because it really pulls on that thing that you get with kind of internet humor, where it's funny to cause trouble from behind a screen. And that's like the central thing, is people kind of like post their definitions in like anonymously and then just wait and see what happens. And it had that kind of feel of almost like an old chat room or something.
Yeah,
like
it was yeah, like exactly.
I felt very nostalgic.
Well, you're talking to somebody who runs a D&D podcast here. So this is,
yeah, preaching to the choir in a big way here. But like, yeah, it just had that sort of enclosed feeling of people talking to each other, like accumulating in jokes, playing off each other in a way that felt incredibly intimate, and did make me realize that those kind of conversations have dissipated somewhat since, you know, now our internet interactions are over these sprawling networks where anyone can take part. There's no chance to incubate any energy and really make the most of it. I thought the game itself was wicked. You know, the fact that everyone had to submit their own definitions. And I think it's one of those games, and this surely is the marker of a really good game, where you can't help but try and make up your own definitions.
Exactly.
Or, you know, try and, like, piece together and go, oh, do you know what? I don't think I would have ever thought of that. And obviously you're playing along as well. And the other thing as well is that it's quite long. It's like an hour and a half, but they break it up with different games as well. I think Steve Lutz orchestrates it in a way that keeps the energy going. I mean, it's the actual word game itself is something that I get the impression you get better over time. And even as a listener, as I was like, okay, I'm getting the hang of this. And so it's good to have a few rounds. But the fact they've got some other games, like the one where they had to, was it Canada Man, where they had to identify?
Oh, yes. And the Google autocomplete one is another favorite.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Which was great because, you know, Stuart Lee, UK comedian, managed to worm his way into an incomparable game show episode. So, yeah, I loved it. I think Steve Lutz is really funny as well and really silly in a way that I can only approve of. So this was an excellent find. And as you say, like, something that I will just be listening to around the house when I just need some kind of release valve in my life to just unwind and enjoy something. So yeah, top, loved it. Thank you so much for putting in my direction. Freddie, I'm going to point at you again, even though I'm singing my voice.
Pointing at me. But what's funny is there's also some kind of like makeshift battle slash divider between the two of us. So I actually just saw kind of a disembodied hand over the top pointing at me.
Waving furiously over the cushions.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I am still relatively new to the world of podcasts on which games are played. So this was a real joy for me and a real kind of reminder of how just how like engaging and inclusive they can feel. Because I think if you are completely unaware of that kind of genre of podcasting from the outside and you're completely new to it and you've never listened to a podcast like that before, I think potentially the idea of a bunch of people who you don't know necessarily just yet, if this is your first time listening to a podcast, it's playing a game in a room that's not in the room that you're in, and you can just kind of listen in but you can't interact with it, could sound like the worst idea in the world. But actually
exactly,
these things work really well. But I think it comes down to a few things, and I think, you know, one of those things is how likable the people are that you can hear playing the game. And I think that the kind of panel of guests on The Incomparable are generally brilliant. I mean, we had Kathy Campbell on super recently.
Yes, we love Kathy.
I listen to a couple of shows with Jason Snellen, so I'm very familiar with him, and Tiff Arment as well. A real big fan of some of the stuff she's done. We actually covered off one of the podcasts she's on with Kathy last time. So, you know, there's some familiar voices in there, which really, really helps. But they're all extremely likable and interesting people, which I think makes a big difference. And you know, the other thing is that you've got a great host in Steve Lutz, and he's so brilliant at tying tying the whole thing together, keeping the whole thing moving, which I, you know, is a product of the edit as well, of course, but you know, there's still got to be someone that leads the way but doesn't overpower everything. Mm-hmm. You know, I think there's a danger when you are the host or you're leading a game or you're setting the rules or you're, you know, in charge and you're, you know, awarding the points, that you can become you can go a bit overboard on the leadership. I think
you could dominate a little bit too much.
Yeah. Exactly. And I think he strikes that balance really well between mm-hmm. keeping things moving and you know, keeping things going but without overpowering it, and you know, making sure that kind of the whole thing feels kind of cohesive and that everyone is involved. So I really, really enjoyed it. I mean, it helps as well that the game is, you know, can be brilliantly hilarious, which it was pretty much the whole way through. I ended up listening to this in like three parts just because my walk to work is about half an hour. So I actually listened to it, you know, on the way there one morning, on the way back another morning. I finished it off on the way there this morning. So, but even then, it was really nice to kind of pick it up and drop it off and enjoy that journey. And like, you know, we've said before, it's one of these shows that you can definitely be doing other stuff as you're listening to it. And that's what I really, really enjoyed about it. So, you know, like Jack, I think I will for sure be picking up other episodes of this to listen to when I want something uplifting and entertaining as I'm, you know, going about my day.
I'll let folks know as well that although the one that we had was the kind of Balderdash themed episode, there have been other ones. Like we mentioned the Trivial Pursuit one, there's a particularly amusing subset of Trivial Pursuit ones where they have an all-American team of panelists, but Anthony Johnston, comic book writer, the guy who wrote Atomic Blonde, actually.
Oh, wow.
He actually hosts it, and it's a UK version of Trivial Pursuit, and it's all the Americans answering the questions. So they're all trying to answer these questions about cricket and, like, who won the FA Cup in 1986.
Oh, wow. That's so cool.
Absolutely hysterical. That's particularly good. And another favourite subset of incomparable game shows is there are these games. You remember the 1980s text adventure games
where you would... Fred, because neither of us lived a day of the 80s, Freddie.
Oh, well, that's unfortunate. you may know what I'm talking about, though, here, which is that, you were playing a video game, but there was no actual video. It was really just text on your screen, and you would type in commands, you know, look left or look up or, you know, pick up such and such. You'd actually physically type these things in, and then a response would be generated. Well, some bunch of clever sods have actually put together basically a PDF of these kind of text adventure type things that you can play with human beings in a room, where one person acts as the computer, that's basically the host, and everybody else is typing in like these commands which can be parsed by the machine. And it is absolutely hilarious. There's one called Action Castle that they do. And I have to say, if you're looking for a laugh, listen to Action Castle as these people struggle valiantly to try and make sense of this world which is being spouted back at them by Tony Sindelar, who's hosting it. It's marvellous. They do another one in a jungle adventure. It's the same exact thing, but one of the players gets hopelessly lost and can't understand what the heck's going on. And the unedited version of that reduced me to floods of tears of laughter. Like, I was helpless. I was walking my dog, may he rest in peace, at the time that I was listening, and I actually had to stop and sit down on a wall because I couldn't see where I was going with the tears flooding down my face as I listened to these poor people trying desperately, because they all had to take turns, and this person who didn't understand what was going on was basically screwing it up for everybody else, and they were getting so mad at it. Marvelous.
Oh,
so yeah, definitely worth delving into, I would say.
Oh, fantastic. Well,
excellent.
Top marks for your recommendation. Ding ding ding.
Thank you.
Yes. was ding 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 a reference to Low Definition just then when they get stuff right?
It wasn't strong enough, but you know what, I went with it and I have no regrets.
Great. I'm happy with that. Which leads me on to a more serious podcast recommendation, I suppose. This is probably not one that you're going to find yourself in floods of tears and unable to see where you're going, but hopefully enjoyable all the same. So this is the tip-off.
Depends. It depends if you've been involved in tax evasion.
This is it, yeah. I think I'm imagining there are a few people out there who've probably got offshore companies who aren't such a, you know, aren't feeling so great about this, but are definitely crying not for reasons of humour. This is the tip-off. And it's a podcast that kind of goes behind the scenes of big investigative journalism stories. And we've said this on Episode Party a few times before, but Jack and I both have a journalism background. We both studied at a university, and I worked as a journalist for a little while. So we both kind of can get a bit nerdy about this kind of stuff. And so as soon as I saw this podcast, I can't remember where, if someone recommended it to me, I think, but as soon as I saw it, I was like, okay, I can see myself getting into that. And I thought, well, the best place to start really is with the episode about the Panama Papers, because at the time that was just come out, and I remember reading about it all when it had come out. So this felt really, really up to date for me, and it felt like a good place to jump in. And I think it is. And yeah, I like this podcast for a few reasons. First of all, yeah, it kind of scratches that itch of kind of the ex-journalist who knows how much work goes into putting together these kind of stories. It also gives me a bit of an understanding of the story itself in a way that you don't get from just reading the news, because you're so consumed by the scandal or, you know, the information that you don't necessarily think about the mechanics of what's going on and why it's important. And yes. I think Jack and I have spoke about this before, but there's a lot of merit in revisiting old news and thinking about it from a vantage point of, well, why did it matter, or why does it still matter, and what kind of consequences does it have? And I think, you know, that isn't what this podcast is about necessarily, but I think it does somewhat do that job of kind of giving you that little bit more information. In this case, this was the largest leak of information of all time, and I think still is. And you know, the third thing that I really, really love about this show is that it delves into the kind of the mechanics of how those stories are created, and the often kind of unglamorous mechanics of it. It wasn't in this episode, that there was a different episode that I listened to where we were talking about a poor guy who's sitting in a room with no windows in the middle of summer, searching through people's like bank statements, you know. And it just reminds you that there's a lot of work that goes into these things. And I think, you know, a lot of journalism rightfully gets a bad name these days because it is cheap and it is mostly made up, and you know, it's not good stuff. But you know, stuff like this is brilliant, and I think there's, you know, there's a lot of merit in it. And without knowing these things, you know, the world wouldn't change. And I don't want to kind of grandize it too much, but I just really, really love that kind of behind the scenes look that this gives.
Yeah.
Which I really, really enjoyed. Ian, what did you think?
Well, I said at the get-go tonight that I think stories make the world go round. And this doubly scratches that itch for me, because it's not just stories, it's stories about stories.
Yeah.
Which is magnificent. And also, like you said, we, as consumers of media, we tend to have a very surface interaction with that media. We don't tend to think too hard about what it took to get there. I mean, you know, we were talking even before we started tonight there about, you know, editing podcasts, and that's something that most people who consume podcasts don't really think about all that hard. But when you're involved in it, it becomes a big thing. And to see what kind of goes into making the sausage, as it were, is, for somebody outside that world, is fascinating. I mean, I've had ties with the media, I've worked in media, but not necessarily in the journalism side of media. And so that's something I've not really experienced. And being able to put a face, or if you like, a voice to a story that was, you know, so huge, and seeing what the kind of nuts and bolts of what it meant to get that story out there, I found this absolutely intriguing. I really did. I mean, I can tell you now, although I listened to one episode, I am definitely going to be going back to listen to more of this, because I just found it fascinating. I found it, I had no idea of the mechanics and the kind of almost the rules and regulations involved in the release of a story. Of, you know, even, you know, putting the, you know, the people who are being implicated or whatnot, putting the stuff to them before it ever gets near the press, you know, and them having right to reply and all of this kind of stuff. It's like, wow, I didn't think about any of that, you know, and it's a huge part of it. And that sense of, like, as they're describing, you know, as they're getting close to the point where they're allowed to release the story and everyone's kind of hanging on, and then all of a sudden there's an internet leak of the leaked story, and you're like, what is going on here? I nearly screamed at that point. I mean, it was legitimately tense listening. And that's a testament to how well crafted the actual podcast itself was, in terms of, you know, delivering that story in a way that made narrative sense and was in and of itself a story. So I just thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, I can only echo that. And in fact, you've picked up on a couple of points that really stood out for me, Ian. I mean, what I should say is that I do indeed. I studied journalism with Freddie, but I was shockingly bad at anything news related on the degree. I mean, I just, you know, I remember doing a work experience in my local paper, and the guy at the Gazette said that I have no news sense.
Wow.
And he tapped the words that were written down on my feedback sheet and said, no news sense.
I remember
that. That's a crushing indictment, isn't it?
I know. I can't believe it. So, while I did study, you know, journalism, I mean, I took to the sort of more writing, insular sort of writing about music and arts and stuff like that. Things in my, you know, little bubble of creativity, rather than anything to do with the news. But nowadays, and you know, in recent times, have sort of recovered and salvaged what is, I think, a real interest in the mechanics of how these things come together. And what's so wonderful about this, and I think you've both said it, is that it just highlights all the things that you don't consider that go into extracting something newsworthy out of this great mound of data, which is, when it arrives, I mean, I think you get the impression, in my head, you know, when I saw the Panama Papers kind of break, I got the impression that they got this leak, this bulk of files, they opened it up and they're like, oh, quick, start typing, and they had a story, you know, that day. The whole process in between is just an absolute revelation. I mean, even the fact that, you know, they had to find somewhere to upload and store and make accessible these terabytes of data to loads of journalists. I thought the tension of journalistic collaboration was super interesting, because you're trying to draw together expertise which ultimately exists to push stuff into the open. So how do you get insular collaboration between people whose very reflexes tell them that they should be, you know, telling people about it? And I thought the whole discussion on that was excellent. Ian, as you said, I mean, the fact that, you know, not only were they able to draw news stories out of this data leak, but the tip-off was actually able to extract a story out of something that sprawled in all directions and involved people in different countries and things happening concurrently. And the fact, I think it was really clever that Meave, like, concentrated on just three main characters and three main proponents of what brought this story into being. I thought that was really clever. And the fact that they're all situated in different places around the world sort of kept the scope of that open as well. I mean, it's just great. I love hearing, it's so satisfying to hear this gigantic mess at the beginning, this big bulk of files, be just funneled into a point where suddenly it's this huge newsworthy thing, and something that's just exploded over the front pages and actually gets people,
you know,
up and listening.
Well, you know what it's kind of like? It's kind of like, it's as if your daily newspaper came with, like, DVD extras. the bonus behind the scenes stuff.
Yeah.
And you get to see, like, you know when they do that with wildlife documentaries sometimes, like, the last 10 minutes will be like how they actually filmed this section or whatever. I love that stuff.
That
really gets me off. And and this just got me in that exact same zone. It's that kind of like, ooh, this is how they did it. It's brilliant.
Yeah.
I mean, I should add as well that, you know, this one has its own merits in the sense that, you know, like Jack said, they're bringing together literally over 100 different journalists from different countries. And, you know, there's always this worry that, you know, someone's going to go, okay, you know, sod it, we'll just hit publish on this and leak it now because it's worth it. And you know, there was the whole convincing each other that it's always going to be better than the sum of its parts. And you know, the team at the ICIJ who had to kind of bring it all together and, you know, make sure that everyone had access to these, you know, 11 odd terabytes of data, which is an insane amount of what is effectively just PDF documents, you know. You know, you can't believe it. And to make it all searchable, and, you know, you've got people in different languages looking at them and all the rest of it, it's insane. But I should say that, you know, when you get beyond this episode of the Tip-Off, there are other episodes that have their own kind of interest. I started I think it's a three-part series about a string of murders or mysterious deaths, and that's really interesting in its own right because that becomes more like a murder mystery. But it's done through the lens of this journalist who is investigating it and finding out these little details that start to link things together, and, you know, how things do and don't start to add up. And that, obviously, in its own right, is another completely interesting thing. I think, you know, like I say, I chose the Panama Papers one because it's a story that most people are very familiar with. But even listening to this other three-part series that I've only one episode in or so, that I don't actually know the original story, I still find it incredibly fascinating. Yeah. So, and I think, Ian, I think that does sum it up. It's like if your local paper or your daily newspaper came with its own DVD extras, I think there's a line to be stolen there.
Thank you. You know, yeah. I should have been a journalist.
So, yeah, I am glad you've both found it as fascinating as I did.
Hooray!
Yay.
I mean, Ian, you're obviously a podcaster yourself. We've spoken about this a couple of times throughout this episode. It's, you know, you've mentioned the fact that you make these things as well. I mean,
for my sins, yes.
I mean, you know, Nerd Therapy, as I said, when we both guested on Kathy Campbell's podcast, Friends in Your Ears. God, the whole podcast thing about podcasts is so incestuous.
Really kind of incestuous, isn't it?
But you just sound like you're having an absolute really great time. I mean, how what I'm intrigued to know is, like, you've been doing the podcast for a while now. Yeah. Has it changed while you've been doing it? Has there been anything that you've noticed, which, you know, does anything feel differently than when you started doing it, or is it still feel as it did?
Oh, that's a really good question. In one sense, no, because the weird thing was that the very first episode we did, as I mentioned to you when we were talking with Kathy, was that we never actually, you know, actively spoken together until we hit the record button, until we got onto that first Skype call that first day and recorded our first game. We'd never spoken in person before. We'd you know, sent messages to each other, but immediately we hit it off. And we had this little Skype community thing that we have been, you know, operating within all that time now as well. And we've actually become, like, legitimate best friends, all of us.
Wow.
It is the strangest thing, to the extent that Penny and Chris, who are the only other UK folks on the podcast, actually came up to spend Christmas with myself and my wife.
No way! Oh, that's so cool.
And so they came to spend Christmas with us, having never met us before.
Uh-huh. Which is, how did that go down?
Ridiculous. Well, I have to confess, I'm not going to lie. We were slightly worried because, you know, you speak with people and you chat with people and you share things with people, but until you actually meet them in person, you know, you've got no guarantee that this person is not some kind of maniac.
Yeah.
So you're kind of, they and we were taking a big risk. But as it happened, we had a wonderful time. I still wish to goodness that we'd actually recorded Chris and Penny and myself and my wife playing Cards Against Humanity on Christmas Day. Because,
man,
I swear to goodness, that was something else. But we have legitimately, all of us, kind of become really, really close friends. And we're able to share things now with each other that, You know, I would probably struggle to share with even people that I know on a fairly decent level, in quote marks, real life, you know?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah, totally. I wonder if that also is, as well, I mean, this comes back to the thing about the advantages of the internet. There is a, you know, that physical displacement as well is like, mm-hmm. it can really foster a lot of trust between people very quickly because
yeah.
all the other stuff is drawn away and then it's just interaction that's left and it's great.
It's just you, yeah, yeah. So, I mean, with our situation, we've got one guy in Norway, two folks in England, me on an island in the freaking Outer Hebrides. That's their official title, the yeah. freaking Outer Hebrides. And then we've got this bunch of other folks over in the States in various locations. And it's the most disparate group of nomads that you could possibly hope to come across. And yet, throw us all together and weirdly, everybody's kind of aligned in terms of senses of humour and, you know, sometimes you will... It sounds weird to say it's like hitting the same sort of intellectual level. And that kind of is part of the sense of humour thing as well. But there has been this kind of very much a meeting of minds where through it almost seems to be some kind of bizarre kind of divine intervention type thing that this group of people who've got no business being together have been flung together and are loving every minute of it.
Oh, fantastic. Well, I mean, that comes through. Like, you are clearly, again, it's like the incomparable. It's just like, mm-hmm. you are just enjoying each other's company. And it's just like, it's impossible not to smile because it's like, you know, even as a listener, you feel like you're the downer in that scenario if you come in yeah. with a frown. But what time are you recording those now? Because we had a funny...
Oh, good Lord, yeah. So we hit upon a solution to our problem. The problem being that because everyone is so kind of spread out across the globe, the very first session that we recorded, we ended up recording at 9 a.m. UK time, which was like 3-4 in the morning for the folks in the States, and they were willing to get up to do it, which is insane.
Wow.
I mean, if you listen to the session as well, those first three episodes, which was the one recording session, there are moments where you will hear somebody saying, "Oh, that's the sun getting up now."
That's oh my god. Intense.
And so we had massive, massive scheduling problems, but we basically worked our way around this to the now that every third Saturday of the month we record, and we record at either 6 or 7 p.m. UK time. So it's not too arduous a task for any of us to make that. So now we have a set time, we just have to keep that one day clear.
Yeah.
Everything else is fine.
Oh, nicely done.
And I will say something else as well, which is much the same as the Incomparable Game Show thing that I was talking about earlier. Certain things will sound to other people like they are a horrendously bad idea. Like when I heard that the Incomparable guys were playing Trivial Pursuit as something that other human beings would want to listen to, I laughed because yeah. I thought that is the most preposterous and ridiculous thing I've ever heard. Why, in the name of all that is good and holy, would anybody want to listen to other people playing Trivial Pursuit and not yeah. be taking part themselves? And yet, it works. In the same way, I had zero interest in D&D all through my youth, and until I'd heard the Incomparable guys playing D&D, I didn't realise that this was even an option of something that could be entertaining in any way, shape or form to play
right,
or to listen
yeah.
to. And yet, having heard these guys with their Total Party Kill podcast doing the same thing, that was my introduction to D&D, and from that point on I was like, I've got to play this, I've got to do this, and I've got to find a group of people to do it with. And yeah, and here I am like a year and a half later, sitting on like nearly 40 episodes of our own D&D show and having an absolute riot doing it.
Well, we should definitely encourage listeners to check out that podcast. And in fact, where can people find you generally as well, Ian? Where's the best place to find, you know, both your output and also you?
So if you want to get hold of me in any way, shape or form, Twitter is pretty good. So that's at Ian McKinnon on Twitter. That's IianMackinnon. And the podcast that I've been referring to is Nerd Therapy. and that is at NerdTherapyPod on Twitter. You can also find us at, I'll have to actually check this because I haven't used the site for so long, but we do have nerdtherapy.xyz or xyz if you happen to be of the North nice. American persuasion.
Yeah, nice.
And nerdtherapy.xyz, that will give you all the links to our iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, email, Facebook, all of that jazz for Nerd Therapy. But if you just search Nerd Therapy in your podcatcher of choice, you will find us.
Excellent. Well, yeah, I'll echo Jack in saying that people should definitely go and check it out. We, just in case you're listening to us and wondering where to find us, even though you're listening to us, we are at episode underscore party on Twitter, and we are www.episode.party on the internet, where you can find all of our episodes, links to shows we're talking about, and ways to get in touch if you want to share a recommendation with us or tell us pretty much anything about any of the shows we've talked about. I think that just about does us. So, Ian, thanks once again for coming on and giving us your recommendations. It's been a pleasure.
It has been an absolute delight on my part too. It's been a lot of fun, and I'm really glad that I came because I probably wouldn't have found this stuff on my own.
Brilliant. And that's been it. I've been Freddie Harrison.
I've been Jack Tutor.
And we'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Bye.
Hey everyone, Freddie here. If you're enjoying Episode Party, please head over to iTunes and leave us a rating and review. It means a lot to us and it really helps us out. Thanks.